Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I'm your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. In every episode, we aim to help marketers maximize their potential by getting real with industry experts across multiple industries and disciplines. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy, we talk through it all and leave you with actionable tips to help you in day-to-day marketing. Now, my guest today was Melanie Diesel, and I'm not gonna lie, I fangirled a little because I'm obsessed with her book. She is a keynote speaker, author, award-winning branded content creator, and a lifelong storyteller. The author of the best-selling marketing and business communications book, The Content Fuel Framework, How to Generate Unlimited Story Ideas, and the founder of Story Fuel. She spends her days giving keynotes and leading workshops that teach marketers, creators, and companies of all sizes how to create better content. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for my guest today, Melanie. Melanie, thank you so much for coming on the Grin Gets Real podcast. I am excited to be talking to you about creating stories and sharing brand stories.
I'm excited for us to get into the good stuff here.
Absolutely. Let's hit the ground running. Share a little bit about who you are. And honestly, I wanted you to kind of share with the audience why you wrote the book, The Content Fuel Framework.
Yeah. So my background personally is that of a journalist. I studied journalism. I always thought I was going to be like an old school reporter, like, you know, with a long notebook, like uncovering injustice and things. That was the vision I had for myself. Unfortunately, my vision was built around like a world of journalism that hadn't existed for about 20 years at that point. Yeah. It was all, you know, digital and multimedia at that point. So quickly found that the skills that I had and the things I loved about journalism were incredibly useful in sort of a marketing, advertising, and sales context. That being able to go out and find sources who are able to share their expertise, to interview customers and clients, to find stories that are worth telling. You know, I always say you never see a newspaper that doesn't come out because they couldn't come up with anything to say, right? The nothing to post problem doesn't happen in journalism. So, you know, we're always able to find new stories. So really for the last, goodness, I guess for the last 10 years or so, I've really been focused on taking those skills that I learned training to be a journalist and putting them to work for brands and you know, hybrid brand publishers that, you know, around the country and around the world. Hoping to bring some of that expertise into their teams and make it easier for their teams to tell stories. As part of that, I do a tremendous amount of like speaking and workshops and going to conferences and things. And, you know, essentially the book, The Content Fuel Framework, is my workshop that I used to give in these corporate environments and still do many times, but made more accessible. I had this incredible feeling of guilt that if there are small businesses, nonprofits, yeah, students, you know, they weren't going to be in a situation where they could be in one of these workshops. I wouldn't get the privilege of teaching them because that wasn't the environment that I usually worked in. And so I wanted to take all that knowledge that I could from a workshop that would normally be for a bigger corporate company and kind of try to make it as accessible and as affordable as possible so that I could still get that information out to folks who aren't working in a big, you know, a big corporation, who are individual creators or small business owners or students, you know, many different groups who aren't bringing in outside workshop leaders. So it was really just trying to democratize that system and that process to make it as accessible as I could.
And I think that you hit the nail on the head. I'm obsessed with the book. So I got the audio, and then I'm also getting like, so that I have physically have it in hand and can highlight. So I'm going to really pull in a lot from what you say in the book, because it is such a great structure, right? And yeah, one of the ideas that I kind of want to get out of like the way, or one of the questions that I kind of want to just get out of the way, is whose job is it to come up with the content ideas? And I don't literally mean like, oh, okay, so the director of content, but yeah, I know that you've experienced kind of building out all of these kind of content teams. And yeah, I'm really curious whose quote unquote job is it to create those content ideas? Is it, does it sit all in marketing? Is it collaborative across like companies that you've seen? Like, what have you seen successful in your experience?
So I think a big part of why the book is helpful is because in so many cases, it's someone who is not normally tasked with that kind of activity, right? So it's someone who isn't the director of content or the head of marketing. It's someone who just loves what they do or happens to be the most savvy, you know, with the computer or something. And so they're the go-to, right? When I look at the teams that are really successful, it is almost always a collaboration between multiple departments. And which departments, I think it really varies by brand based on what's most important. So if it's a nonprofit, for example, it's probably your fundraising team that's going to work together with marketing and communications because your values and your goals are very aligned. In a lot of organizations, like you mentioned, it is sales or customer service or whatever sort of public-facing department you're also trying to reach the same audience with.
Yeah.
But I think with a lot of technical companies, it's often engineers, designers, product folks who have to be part of that conversation because the messaging, the stories we're telling, you know, really involve a lot of education. And that's especially true, again, if it's a highly technical thing or if you work in like a heavily regulated industry, you know, if you're in finance or pharmacy or insurance, like you're probably going to have legal in there with you as well. Maybe more than one round on each piece of content you create. So it's always a group effort. And I think that's why it's so important that everyone feels like they can tap into that creativity and have a way to contribute to that conversation, no matter what their job title actually is.
Now, I definitely agree. And I love that you've said that it is much more of a cross collaboration in order to really create, like, not just a content asset, but to create an effective story behind that as well, too. Because I know that I see it in, you know, behind the scenes in my world where if I'm creating something for the marketing department, right? In my eyes, I can totally see how the sales team can use it, how our success team can use it, and how our product team can use it, right? Then to me, the difference is what's the pitch to each person in that customer journey. So I love the cross-departmental. I think that's incredibly like key to the success for content.
Yeah. And a big part of it too is that whoever is tasked with coming up with content ideas, the people who are in these other departments are going to have so many ideas that you could never come up with on your own. So in working with your sales team, you know, you may be great at coming up with marketing content, blog content, social content, but that sales team is going to know what the most common objections or misunderstandings or myths are, you know, those objections that your consumers and prospects have. And that may be something you never knew, you were never aware of. And that can inspire a whole new content series or content topic that your perspective as a content creator or a marketer doesn't expose you to a need that your consumers have. Same thing with product or engineering or any number of departments. So I think the more voices you can have in that conversation at some point, the more diversity of ideas you're going to be able to bring to your audience.
I love that. I'm going to probably say love a lot. I can already hear it in my voice. Guys, I promise it's not a filler. I truly have a genuine love for this. But so for the foundation of your framework, there are two key elements. One of them is format, which definitely makes sense, right? Like that's your, are you creating an infographic? Is it a one sheet? All of these different types of formats. But what I would love for you to break down is focus. What do you mean by focus?
Yeah. So the reason for the two, like just to kind of set the stage, is I think the reason like coming up with content ideas is really difficult is because it actually is two questions. It's the two you just mentioned. Like, sure, what's the format? How are we going to bring it to life? But the focus is really core. What is it that we're actually trying to say? What's the message? What's the lens through which we're going to tell this story? So to make it really tangible, a couple of the focuses we talk about are people, data, and history. So as an example, you've got a new product coming out. You could tell the story of that new product by talking to the people who are involved in creating that product, or by talking to the people who have used it as beta testers, or the people who are going to use it, sharing the benefits and how it will change what they do. You could talk about the data. How much time does it save people? How long did it take to create? How many versions of it did you go through? Like really dig into the numbers. And then you can also talk about the history. Like what are the innovations, the products, the developments, the discoveries that led you up to this point where you are now? Kind of reminding us to turn around and talk about the trends and evolution and growth that brought us to this current point. And those are just three of the different focuses. So kind of a reminder that there are a lot of, I hate the phrase, a lot of ways to skin a cat. We've got to come up with something better and like less violent and disgusting to substitute in for that phrase. But there are a lot of different ways you can approach the same topic by telling many different stories that relate back to that topic.
Okay, so you keep saying stories. And the reason that I also really appreciate that is because I think that it's different than saying, I need to answer this question. You know, you go back and continue to say stories and stories and stories. So I'd love to hear what you think the value of storytelling is for a brand. And why do you think it's so valuable?
So story is one of those buzzwords, I feel like, where a lot of people define it in different ways. And again, there's a lot of ways we can look at it. So some people look at story as like a very firm structure, you know, beginning, middle, and end, or conflict, rising, action, resolution, right? There are so many different frameworks you could use for the pieces of a story. But to me, it really comes down to communicating in a human way. You know, this conversation that we're having here, we're talking like people, the way people talk to connect to one another. You know, you're not saying, when was the book out? And then I give a date, and then how many pages? And I give a date, right? It's a natural conversation. And there's a difference in how enjoyable that is to both create for us and to consume. And so for me, when I'm saying stories, it's really just meant as a reminder that no matter what we're creating, if it's an infographic or a sell sheet or a poster, like, we're communicating to our audience, and we are people and they are people. And so telling these stories, giving this information in a natural human way, like that's what comes instinctively to us as people. It's the way we communicate with others. You know, it just needs to be a constant reminder that, you know, yes, we have strategies, we have goals, we have KPIs and metrics and all these other things. But like at the end of the day, we're communicating information from one person or group to another. And so reminding us that like, that's really the core of what we're doing. And we don't want to lose sight of that, or we just become an information exchange. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about loving pure information exchange. It's always an experience or a story that comes out by default.
That's very Spock-like to bring in like Star Trek, right? Like he's the one that's very cut and dry and all of that good stuff. Well, then it sounds like what you're saying is that really the key to being a good brand storyteller is remembering that it's human to human interaction behind it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it sounds a little trite, like it's not B2B or B2C. It's all P2P, we're all people to people. You know, I know it sounds like a, you know, a cheesy bumper sticker or like a LinkedIn bro poetry kind of situation, but it really is just like getting back to those basics. You know, it's so instinctive to us as people. I like to remind people of this. Anytime you ask someone, hey, how was your day? They don't say 7 meetings, 3 resolutions, 2 remaining challenges. Like, they're going to say, I had a really good meeting with my boss this morning. We came up with a really cool project for next quarter that we're going to work on. And you won't believe how amazing this salad was at lunch. I've never been to this place before. You know, you tell a story. That's like our instinctive way of communicating, is to really like bring emotion and feeling and sequence of events into it. So, you know, we already know this stuff. I think it's just really easy in a marketing or sales context to get so wrapped up in the way that everything we do is so structured that we just like forget to act like humans.
Yeah. Well, and I think even more so now, I almost feel like it's even more so now because of the pandemic and our need for that human connection. I was just talking to someone who didn't have their camera on, and I didn't realize I didn't have my camera on. So I turned it on and I told them, I'm like, I am the first person that's going to call someone out for not having their camera on. I don't care what you look like, but we're in this box. We all live in this box. Let me see your face so I can see how you're reacting to me, please. Like, I feel like we're craving that human connection even more now, more than ever. And it's about like developing that relationship so that we can have a conversation. So it feels like we're having a conversation, not having a transactional, like, I bought this, thank you very much, like going back and forth. And I hate the chatbots that I know are not people. I'm like, listen, I have this kind of question right here. So I don't know if you have the same kind of sentiment as well as like the need for people to feel like they're engaging with people even more so now because of just what we've all been through.
Yeah. You know, I haven't looked at the data recently, so I don't want to quote anything incorrectly, but broad strokes, I remember that early on in the pandemic, we did see a rise in the appeal of video. Whereas, you know, I mean, the before times, we never used to do video calls unless you had to share a screen, right? It was, we would do video calls to show a deck, show slides, to share a spreadsheet, but it wasn't just to like look and talk to each other. That was not the purpose of video calls before. And now video calls are almost the default where when you suggest a phone call, people are like, just a plain old phone call where we won't even see each other. Like that's, it's a strange concept now, right?
It is a strange concept. Why are you not FaceTiming me? What are you doing?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I think one thing I've tried to be super mindful of is, you know, I think in many ways, video calls can be less accessible to some people, you know, whether it's like, you know, their living situation or, you know, if they have social anxiety that makes like looking people directly in the eye, you know, while having conversation difficult. But I do think that if it's something that you can do and that you're comfortable doing, it really can add, again, more of that human element that feels just a little bit closer to when we were all kind of hanging out in the same room instead of, you know, different rooms and in little boxes.
Yeah. Everybody's in this little box. I think it's funny. The eye contact thing is really difficult on Zoom because in theory, I should just be looking at the green light, but I always want to look at like the person's face. So I'm hoping it doesn't look like I'm looking off completely to the side. I'm like, that's where you are at my screen. Like I should move things up.
This is like a thing that I have noticed and I had a hard time with this. I do a lot because I mentioned the speaking stuff. I do a lot of like recording videos and for me, I'm very mindful of that. And I can see when I'm playing something back, like, dang it, I wasn't looking at the light exactly. And it's bugging me. So what I've figured out is if you hide your toolbars and you move the window up as much as you can to get that person's face as close to that center that green light where the camera is as possible, you're still looking at them and it feels natural for you, but your eyes are pointed more in the direction of the camera versus like the center of the screen or something.
This is the hack of the episode right now.
There you go.
They're getting more than what they even thought that they were going to get for sure.
It's true.
I also really like that you said the before time. The before time, I do think, you know, we used to tune in to TV, right? And commercials. And now what we do is we're tuning into people. So with so many brands really stepping into or at least doubling down on like the creator space, what is your take on creators as brand storytellers as part of like your content framework?
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes total sense. I've always been a big fan of find the experts. You know, that's a journalism tactic we use. I don't know everything about every story I have to report on. So I've got to find the experts to fill in the blanks. And so if you're not, as a brand or an organization, a TikTok expert or a Pinterest expert or a Instagram Live expert, then like, by all means, you would have found a graphic designer if you weren't a graphic design expert. So if you're creating a specific type of content that requires different skills and tools than you have, find someone who has those skills and tools and even better, also has an audience. I think that's, I mean, that's a win-win for sure. It is something that I always caution people too, is to just make sure you're doing it with intent. I think too many brands almost feel like, okay, if we get someone semi-famous to use our product in a photo or in a video, then like that's the key to success. Like riches will just fall from the sky as soon as the light
just starts raining down.
But like it's not that simple. And there's a lot of stories if you look for them where influencers or micro influencers, creators will launch a makeup line, a clothing line, and they don't sell a single dang thing. They can't get people to buy their stuff because the relationship they have with their audience is not one of recommending products, right? However, there are many creators. You know, if you have a makeup influencer, like their whole thing is reviewing makeup and beauty products and showing what works and what they like. That's a really natural place for a brand to have a presence. If someone is just, you know, just has a nice looking family or a nice looking living room, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like the, remember the picture of the Kardashians like posing in bed with Febreze? And it was just like, what? Who on earth approved this? Like, it makes no sense. Why are you in bed with Febreze? What does it have to do with anything?
The inauthenticity, right? Not real.
Do any of us believe that Kardashians walk around Febrezing their own rooms? Like, no, of course not. So it doesn't make sense, right? So you have to find those influencers and creators that have the right type of relationship with their audience where your brand is going to make sense in that context.
And relationship comes up again. I would say it's the key to most marketing strategies and definitely is one that can really give you that return on investment that you're looking for from like a brand perspective, right? But it takes a lot of work to build those relationships, to find those creators, but also like to develop the relationship internally so that you get those content ideas or those storytelling ideas too. But back to the creators and your framework, how does your framework fit for like the third party exposure, right? So if I'm coming up with the idea as the brand and I'm using your framework, I'm like, all right, this is the format is creator, or maybe is creator a format? Should I look at it in that way?
So I would say what the creator is creating would be the format. So are they creating video or written blog post, or they're a designer, so they're creating an infographic. Yeah. You still want to talk about how that idea comes to life, regardless of who it is that brings it to life. So I would say you could still absolutely use the framework to come up with ideas that you might pitch to a creator. Okay. But oftentimes the best ideas when you're working with the creator is actually to do that type of thing together. Now, you don't necessarily have to introduce the creator to the framework if that's what you're using, but I would say the creator probably knows their audience and their interests much better than we can from afar. And so having that conversation together to say, look, we're really interested in talking about the history of our product or, you know, sharing the benefits, but what do you think is going to be best for your audience? And that's where they can say, they love tutorials. So let's do something that's process focused. Let me show them how to set it up. Like that is what would work. So that kind of conversation, I think if you're working with a creator or an influencer, it has to happen collaboratively because without it, you're sort of designing in a silo.
I agree 100%. And I really like that you are able to map that framework back to whether you use a creator or something else. I don't know what else you would use, but whatever it is that you use, that like, you know, it's definitely something that you can use to create just kind of that list, get that story that you want to share. Like, I want to share the history of it. And that's what you go to with the creator who already, to your point, knows what the format is, knows what's going to resonate, knows what's not going to resonate. I always tell customers, like, you have to think of your social feeds. It has to be inspirational, educational, right? Or entertaining. And the creator knows which one to hit and when and on what platform. So you should definitely depend on them. But I really appreciate that it is focus and format is still something that can be translated to other areas as well too.
Yeah, well, and this is what I always say, regardless of whether you like air quotes use the content fuel framework, like you're using it. Every piece of content you create has a focus, right? Like you're saying, I hope you're saying something, and it has a format. It comes to life in some way. So what I always underscore for people is like, this is very flexible and adaptable to whatever you create with whomever you create. You know, you can remove some of the focuses if they don't align with your brand. You can remove some of the formats if you don't have access to those kind of tools or you know, that talent. You can add your own dimensions to it. You know, it's really just kind of a way of thinking when I'm trying to come up with content ideas, I'm actually coming up with two things, both my focus and my format. And that makes that whole process a lot easier.
Well, and you're right. You're going to do that naturally. But I also think having those two elements as almost like a bit of a checklist of like, well, wait a second, what am I missing? I think is a really great way to wrangle all the ideas too, because at different companies, I've been part of like, you know, different think tanks where everybody's throwing ideas, but then it's almost like they don't have direction, right? And I think that's why I gravitate towards like everything that you wrote in the book where I'm like, oh no, this is the structure that I visualize. So when you walk out of a meeting, you're like, all right, did we hit these two things? If we did, then we have a solid idea that we can move forward with.
Right. And if you're missing one, then at least you know what's missing.
Because sometimes
you have that end of brainstorm where you're like, this is like part of an idea, but it's not fully formed. I don't know what's missing, but it's not quite there. So it's almost like a checklist. Yeah. Of like, okay, all ingredients are present. We can now move into baking mode.
Exactly. We can now bake because nothing's getting cooked unless we've got all of these ingredients here.
Exactly.
I like that. Now, how do you measure the success of content? Do you look at impressions? Is it something that you can measure? I feel like I'm always challenged with this as well too. Is it number of content assets that you create? But then I lean in and I'm like, well, I can create one powerful asset, or I can create 50 different assets that are equally as powerful. Like, is it an it depends situation on how you typically measure the success of content you've created?
I think like all of the deep and very important marketing questions, the answer is it depends.
It depends, yeah.
Unfortunately. But what I can give you is sort of a what it depends on. So hopefully you end up in the right direction. So it really depends on your goal. What is it that you are trying to do? If you are trying to reach as many people as possible, then volume might be the way to go. If you want to reach a ton of people, you got to make a ton of stuff to give them, right? If you're trying to really deepen your engagement, maybe you're working on retention or you're trying to build loyalty, then it's more important that what you're creating is something that they love deeply and are willing to spend time with. So that's where you want to really emphasize the quality over the quantity. If you're focused on conversion, whether that's downloads, signups, purchases, whatever, trying to get them to take that action, then you want to focus on measuring those actions and creating the content that is most likely to lead to those actions. So you could measure it in terms of awareness. That's the eyeballs, impressions, views, things like that. You could measure the engagement. So that would be time on page or likes, replies, comments, things like that, votes. Or you can measure the conversion. You know, how many signups did we get? Registrations, follows, purchases, add to cart, whatever the case may be. But you really want to kind of reverse engineer that based on your goal. What am I trying to achieve? And based on that, how can I measure that achievement?
I love it. See, it's coming out again. because I do think it depends. And you're right. All of the most burning questions is it depends. And it goes back to attribution and ROI, and then it depends. It really depends on what it is that you're putting together and what your overall goals are. And I think that it's okay to have multiple goals, right? Just as long as you've outlined, this is how I'm going to measure success of this particular asset. I originally created it for this. Did it do this? The fact that it can do other things as well too is also part of that return on investment.
Well, I think having a clear understanding of those goals makes those internal conversations a lot easier because you can manage other people's expectations and say, you know, this particular piece of content, we were going for awareness. So please don't be upset or don't expect there to be many conversions. That's not what we're focused on with this piece, or vice versa. Look, I know we didn't get a bazillion views, but we did get 27 really qualified leads and we were focused on conversion. So that is a win. You know, you can really kind of bring it back to the goal and make sure that others who might not be as used to thinking about content success and measuring it, you can redirect that attention to pay attention to the right metrics that best align with the goals.
No, I definitely agree. Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming to the end. It is prediction time. All right. So what do you see changing for marketers in the next 1 to 2 years?
You know, this is like the last 2 years have taught me anything. It's that no one can predict anything. And all of my predictions are just garbage thrown into the wind. Like, who knows what is happening to anyone at any point. But I could say what I hope continues to happen is I hope we do continue to see this emphasis on more dynamic and interactive formats. I'm a writer first. I love writing, but I hope we continue to have a focus on creating video and live video and more sort of just dynamic content experiences. I think that's kind of for everyone's benefit.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I think the pandemic has pivoted toward education in terms of content in a really big way. People realize the value of content as a way to educate your customers, especially when you may not be able to reach them in other ways.
Yeah.
And I certainly hope that we kind of keep that educational spirit, that educational motivation in the content we're creating, because that is some of the most valuable, the most long-lasting, the most reusable content you can create. So I think if we're focused on dynamic and educational content, I think we're hopefully headed for a better content future, if that's a thing.
That is the thing. I'm riding that wave right now. I definitely feel it. Well, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and geeking out with me over all things content. Everyone needs to read this book, get the book, download the workbooks, the whole nine yards. Thank you again so much. And I look forward to hopefully talking to you again at another time.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me share my story.
Absolutely. I brought you guys down the rabbit hole of content creation on this episode. Melanie dove into the framework of content creation, really reviewing the key elements of focus and format to not only help you generate ideas, but also use it as a bit of a checklist to ensure that you're being strategic enough with the content that you are producing. I was excited to get her thoughts on how to leverage her framework to put together more impactful creator campaigns, as well as the impact of relationships to brand storytelling. And honestly, that's only scratching the surface of how deep we can get with content. Do you want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. Share what you like. And if you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.